Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you are doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and with me, as always, here is my coworker. And here at True Crime Garage, the hours aren't great, but hey, you get to meet a lot of interesting people. Ladies and gentlemen, here is the captain.
Don't worry, boss. I'll clean those toilets. It's good to be seen and good to see you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend.
Today, we are still slow sipping this fine stout from the good peeps over at Magic Hat Brewing Company. This one is called Heart of Darkness. It's a delicious dark stout beer with some hints of chocolate to smooth everything out a bit. Garage grade 3 3/4 bottle caps out of 5. And here's a cheers to some of our friends who get a 5 out of 5 all day, every day. First up is Inger in Oslo, Norway.
And a big We Like Your Jib goes out to Donna in Cookeville, Tennessee.
And last but certainly not least, we have Jennifer Provan from Glasgow. She says, Bonnie Scotland, thanks to everyone who put beers in the fridge for us this week. They all went to our website, truecrimegarage.com, and contributed to the beer fund. And for that, we thank you.
And for that, we say B-E-E-R-R-U-N, beer run. For everything True Crime, check out truecrimegarage.com. We got a great store page there. Sign up on the mailing list, and you can check out the new releases that we put out on YouTube. And Colonel, that's enough of the business.
That's right, Captain. When the boss ain't looking at work, make sure you're listening to True Crime Garage on YouTube. All right, kiddos, gather around, grab a chair, grab a beer. Let's talk some true crime. Yesterday, we discussed the unsolved homicides of 3 what were described as vulnerable female victims. We also discussed a couple of suspects in 1 or 2 of those cases. Today, we start off by talking about an additional suspect here. And oddly enough, this is a man whose name we have mentioned before, but we've not gone into great detail about. This is Michael Bologna.
I could go for a nice fried Bologna sandwich.
35-year-old treasure hunter described by his friends as a generous Mr. Lonely Hearts is a common denominator in the Florida Keys murder mystery, according to police. Investigators from the Monroe County Sheriff's Office said that they have questioned Michael Bologna because he might know something about 2 of the unsolved homicides. But they said that there was no physical evidence linking him to either of the 2 murders that they questioned him about. According to detectives, this is where Michael Bologna becomes very interesting to them for 2 of these unsolved homicides. 1, he escorted the mother of Patty Lanza, the 4-year-old victim, to that party on that fateful night on Little Torch Key back in July of 1988. Then the tall, dark-eyed Michael Bologna also dated the 3rd victim, Sherry Parisho, age 39.
Right.
In fact, it has been determined that she stayed with him for several weeks before she decided to be homeless. She stayed with him for about 3 weeks, and this is very weird, right? We have this situation where this guy has very close ties to 2 of the victims. We should remind everybody out there that there was another individual that was at 2 of the parties that 2 of the victims attended shortly before they were killed. And that was a different individual. And the police have said, look, yes, that guy was at both of those parties, but a lot of the same people were at both of those parties.
Well, and I sound like a broken record. We have 3 victims in a short time period murdered and in a small distance. And these aren't large communities.
Well, and that broken record must be a Kenny G album because you are one smooth son of a bitch.
And I got the hair to match.
The thing that I think we need to really point out here is that while police were talking to him, listen to their statement. Their statement is, we are talking to him because he may know something. That's much different than being a suspect.
Mm-hmm.
Them saying he may know something, well, duh, he might. He seemed to have a close relationship, at least at one time, with our third victim, Sherry Parisho.
That's what my teachers used to say about me. He may know something.
We know that his fact that he went with Patty Lanza's mother, Deborah Lanza, to that party the night that Patty Lanza was killed. But he wasn't the only one that went to that party with her. According to Deborah Lanza, the victim's mother, we have her four children, and we also have Michael Belagna, who brought two kids of his own to the party with them. And then police go on to say, look, we've not ruled out this Michael guy. Is he a suspect? The media is pushing the police to tell them if he is in fact a suspect or not. But what they're saying is they won't rule him out to the media. They will not say that he's not a suspect. But what they do say is the night that Patty was killed, Michael Belagna brought Lanza to the party with her four kids. His son was there as well with him. They go on to say that after the girl went missing, he's still at the party. The mother, Deborah Lanza, says while she couldn't find her daughter at some point, this Michael Belagna was never out of her sight.
Right.
So he's not a suspect in the mother's eyes. The police go on to say he assisted in the search after the party, and he was cooperative with police from Jump Street. So I think that this is one of those situations, Captain, where some might call him a suspect, but he only appears to be a suspect as far as the media is concerned, not as far as law enforcement or the family of one of the victims.
And it must feel absolutely horrific to have people in the community or the media insinuating that you might be responsible for the death of a four-year-old. I mean, that'd be a very tough situation to be involved in.
Those murders took place in 1988 and 1989 in the Keys. Now we have to fast forward to many years later to 2004, and we're going to talk about Hurricane Ivan. Some of you may remember Hurricane Ivan. This was a big and powerful storm. And like with many of these hurricanes in parts of Florida, parts of the Gulf Coast, residents are warned and told, and a lot of times, to evacuate. Well, in September of 2004, they had an evacuation as well going on for Hurricane Ivan. And two individuals, this is Charlie Brandt and his longtime wife, Terry Brandt, they evacuated their home and they went to go stay with their niece. This is Michelle Lynn Jones. She lived up in Orlando. So this was going to be a safe space away from the hurricane, go up and visit. And from my understanding, Captain, Terry Brandt, the aunt, was very close to Michelle Lynn Jones, her niece. And some reports state that Charlie Brandt was close to his niece as well. Throughout this visit, they go to stay there for several nights. And throughout this visit, we have Michelle Lynn Jones that while she has her house guests, she is going to continue with her daily routines. And part of that is keeping in contact with her mother.
The Brandts would stay there for 2 weeks before anybody realized that there's anything wrong.
That's right. The Brandts arrived there sometime around September 2nd, and it isn't until approximately 2 weeks later on the 13th, 14th, 15th that some people start to get concerned, right? Michelle Lynn Jones and her mother, they're close. They shared several of the same friends. And one of their mutual friends stops by the house on September 13th and was supposed to visit with Jones. Jones says, you know, I don't want you to come in. My aunt and uncle are staying here. They've been drinking and they got into some kind of argument. So it's a little uncomfortable. It's a little awkward here right now. Maybe you should come back on another date. And we should be clear here, too. It's not obvious, and it shouldn't be, that there was any predetermination on how long the Brandts would be staying there. I think a lot of that would be determined based off of Hurricane Ivan itself, the storm, and the damages that could come with that storm. But by this point, they've been there for well over a week, close to 2 weeks. And it's on September 15th that another friend of Michelle Lynn Jones, this is Debbie Knight, she goes to the home and she is suspicious of the house, of what she's seeing, of the feelings that she's getting as she pulls up to the house. During this time, the 2 days that have passed since the previous friend coming over and being turned away by Michelle Lynn Jones, Jones's mother was having a difficult time getting in touch with her. So now we have Debbie Knight, another mutual friend who's at the house, and she's on the phone with Michelle Lynn Jones's mother. She tells the mother that the front door is unlocked. You know, she's knocked, she's rang the doorbell. Mom's tried calling her daughter. No response. Shows up, the door's unlocked, and mom says to the friend, go into the house. Try to get, see if you can get into the house. Well, Debbie Knight says that she was so, feeling so uneasy about the situation. She was just getting such bad vibes and this dark, horrible feeling. She was a little scared. So she decided to go next door and grab a neighbor. The neighbor comes back with her, and together the two of them enter the home. And they walk into a house of horrors.
If I'm correct, I believe that the front door was unlocked, but because of this uneasy feeling, they didn't want to enter through the front door.
So they were attempting to get into the house, and they decided that they were going to go through the garage. Well, when they entered the garage, they found Charlie Brandt hanging from the rafters with bed sheets. Immediately, these two contact the police, and the police arrive on the scene very quickly. They enter the house, and then the House of Horrors just keeps getting worse and worse. First, they find this man hanging from the rafters in the garage. And then once they go into the home, they find Terry Brandt had been stabbed multiple times in the chest area. She's lying on the couch, dead. And then they go into the bedroom where they find the homeowner, the niece, Michelle Lynn Jones. She had been decapitated and her heart and organs had been removed. And someone had placed the head next to her body. And in some reports state that it was placed on the nightstand, positioned almost as it was looking at the body itself.
Yeah, some people actually believe that somebody combed her hair.
Without going into too much of the horrific details here, they're easily found online if anybody wants to look them up, but it would be 15, 20 minutes of going through detail after detail of disgusting mutilation that took place in this case. The police are able to deduce a few things. One, that the weapons used to murder Terry Brandt and Michelle Lynn Jones were knives that came from the kitchen. And they're able to piece together a series of events that goes like this, based off of physical evidence found at the scene. They believed that Charlie Brandt stabbed his wife to death as she sat on the couch. And afterward, he then went into another room where he attacked Michelle Lynn Jones, his niece, and then after killing her, mutilated the body. After this, he decides to clean himself up a bit, takes a shower, changes his clothes, and then at some point takes these bed sheets and hangs himself from the rafters, where later all three bodies are found. Following this discovery, police want to know why would this happen, and two, who exactly is this Charlie Brandt? What they discover is that the Brandts were living on Big Pine Key and had been there for many years and had been married for a very long time. So who is this Charlie Brandt? Charlie Brandt was born Eric Carl Brandt, born February 23rd, 1957. In 1986, he married his then-girlfriend, Teresa, who went by the name Terry. The odd thing, though, here, Captain, is no relatives were invited to their wedding. Well, we have relatives and friends from Teresa, from Terry's side, that attend the wedding. We don't have anybody from Charlie's family side attending the wedding. Later, his sister Angela and her husband Jim Graves stayed in contact not just with Charlie and his new wife Terry, but also were friends with Terry and Charlie.
Well, Charlie seemed like a normal guy. He was a good-looking guy. He was a radar technician.
But obviously, after this crime and finding what they found in that house, especially the mutilation that was done to this poor victim.
The niece.
They're now wondering, who is this guy exactly? And does he have any other victims? Well, sadly, he does. He has previous victims, and he has some skeletons in his closet. And the thing here, Captain, there's a lot of debate here because Charlie Brandt, Eric Carl Brandt, goes by Charlie, but he had actually killed his mother when he was a boy. He grew up in Indiana. In 1971, a young Charlie Brandt, then only 13 years old, was accused of killing his mother and attempting to kill his father and his sister. Charlie Brandt is accused of killing his mother, who was 38 at the time and pregnant, and wounding his father. He shot both of them. His father's name is Herbert Brandt, and this took place in January of 1971. He's arrested. There's no mystery as to what happened here because the father survived and the sister survived. And the sister later said that it was very strange because she had no idea that Charlie would do this. He was even capable of doing something like this. The father who survives has no answers as to why his son would have killed his wife and then attempted to kill him. And his sister states that Charlie almost appeared to be in a trance-like state. And before he could kill her or attack her, he seemed to kind of come to. And he had some general understanding, as far as the sister was concerned, that he had done something wrong. But she says that he wasn't fully aware of what exactly that he had done. And given the laws and the situation at the time in the state of Indiana, even though he had killed someone, his own mother, it was looking like a young Charlie Brandt would not be facing a long or lengthy prison sentence.
Yeah, which is pretty nuts because he killed his mom, which was pregnant, tried to kill the dad, and then also tried to kill his sister. How many more people did he have to try to kill?
So in Fort Wayne, Indiana, in 1971, they decided to take this to a grand jury. The grand jury ultimately decides that a lot of this is based off of testimony from psychiatrists at the time, that Charlie Brandt suffered a serious psychotic disorder which produced the criminal act. And the report said that the jurors believed that Charlie Brandt was mentally incapable of standing trial. And they recommended that he be committed to hospitalization. Well, the problem here, Captain, and this is from the experts that say
he's a turd.
Yes, he committed this horrible act. Yes, the jury decided that he should be hospitalized. However, when we sit down and try to evaluate a young Charlie Brandt, we can't come up with any type of known diagnosis that he fits into. There's no category that he fits into. We think there's something wrong with him. We just don't have a term for it. Charlie himself never really offers up any explanation as to what had happened or why he would do such a horrible thing.
Yeah, what was the motivation to kill his mom, which was pregnant with his soon-to-be sibling?
So he was remanded to the custody of the county juvenile court. And we have, again, the mother that was shot to death, the father who was wounded. And in fact, in the beginning, the report coming out was that the father was in poor condition and may not make it when he was first put into the hospital. We know that he does, in fact, survive. And then we have Charlie Brandt, who, when asked what happened, he says, "I felt the urge. I just felt the urge. Everything seemed to snap." That's about as much as he offers up that makes it to the public as to why he would kill his mother and attempt to kill his father. I found this to be very strange, but of course, this is a very strange scenario all around. But he is released.
Oh, God.
And released into his father's custody within just about a year and a half, 2 years' time.
You don't have to be a captain to know that this seems like a bad decision.
Well, here becomes some of the problems for our case, for the case of him killing his niece and killing his wife. It was not 100% confirmed that his wife ever knew that he had killed his mother. There's some speculation that she knew. And in fact, there were people that were still in Charlie's life at the time that had told him, "You have to tell Terry. You have to tell her before you get married." And if he did ever tell her, it sounds like he may have told her after the wedding. Remember, we said that at the wedding, none of his family were present. He likely did not want this woman to know, or maybe not just his future wife to know, but her family to know what he had done as a youth.
Yeah, these are a couple of things you need to go over, you know, before you get married. Are you currently married to somebody else? Do you have any credit card debt? How about student loans? Do you have any children out there? Oh, by the way, did you kill your mother? Did you try to kill your father? Did you try to kill your sister? These are some things you should know before you get married. Now, the friend that did set them up told Charlie that he needs to tell her about his previous crimes.
Right. And he is the one that pushed Charlie to tell Terry. Now, later he says that he believes that Charlie did tell Terry at some point, because he has, this friend has a conversation with Charlie's wife, Terry. The conversation that he has with her is shortly after the third victim that we discussed here, Sherry Parisho, was killed. Sherry Parisho, where she lived on that little boat,
the dinghy,
was just four short blocks from where Charlie and his wife, Terry, lived.
Oh, God.
The wife, Terry, tells this friend after the homicide that she was thinking about calling the sheriff's department. When he asked, "Why would you call the sheriff's department?" she says, "Well, in relation to this murder, the Sherry Parisho murder, I think that given the circumstances of everything, I should give them a call." The friend says that later, or at the time, more importantly, he took that to mean that she, Terry, knew and had been told by Charlie that he killed his mother. And now we have this woman, even all these years later, 39-year-old Sherry Parisho, who was killed, the reports say, four blocks from where they lived. I wanted to make sure that I said four short blocks, because I've seen this reported as it was possibly 1,000 feet from where they lived. Now, at the time, there was an eyewitness in the Sherry Parisho murder. There was a woman who was driving that night, and this is the night of July 16th.
Mm-hmm.
She says that she saw a man that she could not identify, did not know the name of this person, crossing the street, US Highway 1, and the man was carrying a knife. Okay, well, at the time, this is at night, the man is crossing the street and carrying a knife, not a huge deal. This didn't send off any red flags other than it was memorable to her.
Right, or other than the fact that when I go out for my nightly walk, I don't openly just carry a knife with me.
But he's walking toward the water. This driver would have no way of knowing that there's a woman living in a small boat on this stretch of water.
Mm-hmm.
So she provides a description of this individual. And in fact, they had a composite sketch of the man that she saw that night. It wasn't until all of these years later, we're up to about 15 years later, Captain, that now they're going, wait a second, this Charlie Brandt guy who up near Orlando, Florida, kills his niece and his wife, hangs himself, lives very close to where Sherry Parisho was killed, and oh my goodness, he resembles the composite sketch of the man seen that night with the knife. It was almost the perfect crime. Everyone was distracted, their attention elsewhere. Stacks of cold hard cash sitting on the table unguarded. Who wouldn't be tempted to slowly reach their hand out and steal a pile of Monopoly money from the banker? Monopoly is one of those games that can bring out everyone's most devious selves. And Monopoly Go takes that gleeful mischievousness to your phone in a wildly popular twist on the classic game that you can play throughout your day, anywhere, anytime. Collect rent from friends on iconic properties. Bankrupt them by pulling a heist on their vault. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with friends to unlock big prizes and try to top the leaderboards. Whether you're helping out your friends or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is an absolute blast. Download it now free on the App Store or Google Play.
All right, we are back. Cheers, mates, to the windows, to the walls. Cheers to you, Colonel.
Cheers to all of you out there in listener land. Thank you for joining us again here in the garage this week. The murders that took place in 2004 in Orlando, Florida, prompted the police to investigate who exactly was this Charlie Brandt. And then they learn about his background growing up, having killed his pregnant mother. They want to figure out how many murders could this dude have been involved in.
There's different wounds for the different victims. The mutilation to the niece's body is what I think perks up law enforcement to go, well, where was Charlie at during the time of the murders in the Keys?
The crazy thing here too, Captain, is we talk about Charlie Brandt and we went through some of the mutilations done to his niece. It appears that he had some kind of infatuation with his niece that likely was unknown to his wife and to his niece at the time. He had this bizarre nickname for her. He called her Victoria's Secret, which I think is incredibly creepy.
Yeah, that rates 100 on the creepo meter.
That should have been some red flags right there. But again, we are not privy to knowing exactly what his wife Terry knew about him or his past.
Right.
However, when we compare everything that we know about the murder of his niece, the removing of the heart, which was done with surgeon-like precision, according to the experts, and then we compare that to the murder of Sherry Parisho, who was living four short blocks from Charlie Brandt's home the night that she was killed, her heart removed with surgical-like precision. He matches the description provided by the woman who was driving that night as being the man seen crossing the street with a knife. Then we get this weird information that comes out after Charlie Brandt's death, that his wife may have suspected him all along in the murder of Sherry Parisho. The way that the story goes and is told to law enforcement by people that knew the couple is that the wife, Terry Brandt, having been awakened to Charlie coming home very late that night, she says she goes and confronts Charlie, and he is standing at a sink. They had a large sink that was in like a mudroom. Charlie was an avid fisherman, and they had this sink in this setup so he could clean fish at this table.
Mm-hmm.
And he would regularly go fishing. I'm talking multiple times a week. On this particular night, the night that Sherry Parisho was killed, he comes home very late at night, and Terry relays to somebody later that he was covered in blood. And when confronted, he had said that he caught a bunch of fish and he was cleaning the fish.
This reminds me of Dahmer, where they talk about his fascination with the shine of the organs.
Ultimately, they end up closing out the Sherry Parisho case. And they state, they being law enforcement, that Charlie Brandt was responsible for the murder of Sherry Parisho. And they base this off of some of the things that we've already stated, but also the fact that the mutilation that was done to Sherry Parisho was very similar to what was done to his niece.
Yeah, but also couldn't they just pull DNA from the case and test that?
Yes, they could. But here's the problem with that is it's not like they could and decided not to, right? If they had the ability, if they had DNA in the Parisho case, I'm sure they would have attempted to connect it to Charlie Brandt. The problem with the Parisho case is she was not sexually assaulted during that attack. There was no evidence to suggest that that took place. Of course, DNA can come from other parts of the struggle. However, again, if they had that information, I'm sure they would have tested it
mm-hmm.
in such a manner. I would doubt that they're just going to willy-nilly say Charlie Brandt killed Sherry Parisho without conclusively believing that, in fact, he did. It's a difficult case. Right? Because in that case, and you're right there, Captain, what law enforcement is telling us is that the mutilation and the cutting out, the removing of the heart is such a rare thing to do by a perpetrator to a victim that given the proximity and given the statements that his wife made to people that they know and her suspicion of her husband being involved in the murder of Sherry Parisho, they're basing their case and closing their case on that homicide based off of that information, which is not 100% conclusive. But what that leads us to is prompting the police to reinvestigate 26 unsolved homicides in the state of Florida, dating all the way back to 1973, looking for potential evidence of Charlie Brandt's involvement in those unsolved homicides.
So like you're saying, there are so many cases that law enforcement could look at, but they're going to try to narrow that down based off of, look, I mean, there's no way to easy way to say it, but there was extensive mutilation to the victim, his niece. And so to look at that mutilation and then start comparing that to other cases and kind of narrow it down. So you're not just looking willy-nilly at every single unsolved homicide.
That's exactly right. And you hit the nail on the head there, Captain, when you compared it to Dahmer and with the shine of the organs or the shine of the muscle under the skin. What they are saying, what law enforcement is telling us, is based off of the extensive mutilation done to his niece, that they believe Charlie Brandt had a proclivity for this type of thing, that was the drive in the homicides committed by Charlie Brandt, the removal of the heart, the removal of organs, the decapitation, things of that nature, the injuries, the mutilation and such almost mirror one another in Sherry Parisho's case and in the homicide of his niece. So they are looking for cases that are going to be very similar to that. Now, they narrowed that down to 26 cases of interest that they looked at Charlie Brandt. One of them was the 1978 murder of Carol Sullivan, age 12. She was abducted from a school bus stop in September of 1978. Her skull was found in a paint can. She was decapitated, obviously. They never recovered her body. So mirroring her injuries and mutilation to that of Charlie's niece or Sherry Parisho was going to be impossible. Now, I want to say this in fairness to Carol Sullivan's family, because her family has expressed a concern with connecting Charlie Brandt to the murder of their family member. They have said that at no point ever was Charlie Brandt considered to be a suspect. There were suspects in her case, suspects that it sounds like the family likes much better than Charlie Brandt. And she comes about to be connected to the Brandt case from the authors of this week's recommended reading. And they don't definitively say that they believe Charlie Brandt killed Carol Sullivan. They just say that he was in the area at the time, and this murder is not terribly unlike murders committed by Charlie Brandt. But in fairness to her family, who do not believe he killed her, we will move on from the Carol Sullivan case. The next one is that of the 1988 Lisa Sanders case that we discussed at length. And again, it's debatable what parts of that mutilation were conducted by the killer or conducted by animals. That one makes it very difficult to say. And in fact, the removal of organs in that case does not match up, does not line up with the Sherry Parisho case, does not match up or line up with what was done, what Charlie did to his niece's body after she was murdered. And we should go ahead and move on from the Patty Lanza case, because we have law enforcement that said back in 88 and in 1989, we don't think this case is connected to these other two. This is the one that we feel is absolutely not connected to the Sanders case or the Parisho case. And then they say that again in 1990. In fact, they say in 1990 that they have definitively ruled out any connection between the Lanza case and the Sanders and Parisho case. That leads us to a victim that we've not discussed yet. In 1995, a sex worker named Darlene Toler, age 38, her body was discovered near Miami, found in the grassy area off of a highway. Her body was wrapped in blankets and in plastic. When discovered, she was missing her head and her heart. And it's simply the removal of the heart that connected Charlie Brandt by law enforcement to this case. Law enforcement would go on to tell us that Charlie Brandt used that same highway regularly. And one thing that they found that was disturbing to them in their review of these unsolved homicides is the fact that the heart was removed, one, and two, Charlie kept some information that they found interesting. He kept mileage records of his vehicle and of his travels. And on the day of Darlene Toller's murder, roughly the driving distance between Big Pine Key, where he lived, and the area of Miami where Toller's body was discovered, matches up with his records, his mileage records for that day.
Well, and it's tough with this guy because he is a giant pile of shit. But we should talk about this poster that's on that they found in his bedroom.
Yeah, they were going through Charlie's belongings after the double homicide and then suicide committed in 2004. And one item of note was this anatomy poster that was found in the bedroom of Charlie and his wife. And this is a poster that is a female body, and it is that you have the muscles and organs on one side, and then you have the skeleton on the other. It's a very science textbooky type poster, but
except for that they add hair and put the lady's hair in a bun, which is a little strange.
Very strange. And you can find that poster if you just Google Charlie Brandt poster. It comes up.
We'll put it on our social media as well.
The thing here is that this one, I think in anybody's bedroom, this would be concerning. He's not a doctor. You know, he's not a scientist. It appears that he's studying anatomy, but he doesn't really have any professional or career reason to do so.
Well, he's a career murderer, so he needs to study this if he wants to keep cutting victims' hearts out.
I would find this to be a weird item to be in anyone's bedroom, especially a married man. But then let's compound that with the fact that we know that he dissected his niece.
Yeah.
And those mutilations mirror that of Sherry Parisho that lived 1,200 feet or so from his home on a night when his wife confronts him and says that he's covered in blood and came home very late. She even says to a friend, maybe I should contact the sheriff's department.
Yeah, duh.
After this homicide.
This is nuts.
When we compare this to Darlene Toller's murder that took place in Miami, it's not a terrible stretch from Big Pine Key to where the body of Darlene Toller was found. And in fact, he has mileage records in his vehicle that back up that he may have gone to that area on the day that she was murdered. Police go on to say after finding things at his home, knowing of his background of killing his mother when he's a kid, the homicides that he did in 2004, look, they found on his computer that he was searching for snuff films.
Oh, flicky, flicky, flicky.
That he was looking for torture videos. That he was searching for autopsy photos.
Yeah.
This guy had clearly had a fascination of the inside of a person.
Well, he has a sexual fascination.
You talk about Dahmer, but this guy reminds me a lot of Edmund Kemper, somebody who killed his grandparents with a firearm when he's a teenager, goes away for a while, and when he gets out, he's not just shooting people. He's kidnapping and mutilating the bodies, cutting off the heads. Charlie is cutting off the heads and removing the heart of these victims. And in fact, it was the removal of the heart that the police were focusing in on when trying to connect him to potential other homicides that took place near Charlie Brandt in the time that he lived in Florida.
Yeah, I think the difference, though, when you look at Dahmer or Kemper, I mean, you can make an argument in their case, whether it was nature or nurture. I think in the Charlie Brandt case, it's just nature. It just seems like this is the way he was born. He was messed up from the beginning.
And that excerpt from Edgar Allan Poe goes beyond just the idea of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
That line where Poe says, "There was no reason for what I did." I look at the cases of Charlie Brandt and the ones that law enforcement say he is guilty of, the murder of his mother, the murder of his wife, his niece, and the murder of Sherry Parisho, and I can't find it one good goddamn reason why he did any of those murders, let alone all four of them. There's no reason for what he did. The only thing that could possibly explain it is that he's not like you and I, Captain. He's not like the rest of us. There's something incredibly wrong with this guy. And he was so easily able to hide it and keep it inside and hide it from everyone. When he killed his wife and his niece, his friends, their family, they say they had no idea that this would even have been possible. He wasn't a violent individual,
yeah,
as far
like
as they knew.
Again, he seemed pretty normal. Everybody thought he seemed pretty normal. Everybody thought he seemed pretty intelligent. Where again, I think if we're going to compare people, this I think leans more towards like a Bundy, where maybe he doesn't have the charisma or anything like that. But I think Kemper put some people off with his personality, and I think so did Dahmer.
Yeah, and I would bet you that the people closest to Charlie Brandt may have seen some sides of him that aren't so obvious to the rest of us. Maybe they had some things that put them off about Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
But Detective Pat Diaz, who is just one of many detectives that were working on possible cases that they could connect to Charlie Brandt. He goes on to say that it doesn't, to him, that this is some kind of disease. And he and others would agree that a guy like this just doesn't stop. Doesn't stop somewhere between the three cases, between murdering his mom and then all those years later murdering his wife and his niece.
Well, and this is where there's a part of me that agrees with law enforcement that you have to look at, you know, the mutilation of his last victim. But I think it's probably you're going to see some kind of escalation. That's what's going to make it a lot more difficult for them, because there could have been a gradual escalation to where he ended up at.
In the Darlene Toller case, they were trying to scientifically connect it to Charlie Brandt. In fact, they found dog hairs in the bed of his truck. There were dog hairs, or animal hairs, I should say, that were found on the blankets that her body was wrapped up in.
Right.
They sent those away for comparison, for scientific analysis, and could not conclusively confirm that those hairs matched one another. So we don't get any scientific evidence to back up the idea of what law enforcement believes is Charlie Brandt having been involved in the murder of Darlene Toller in 1995. But the detective, Pat Diaz, goes on to say, I believe that this is a disease. This guy didn't stop in between those three cases. Darlene Toller was found stuffed in garbage bags in South Dade County. It was almost like the killer delivered us a package with the body left on the side of the road for everyone to find. After the murder of Darlene Toller, 9 other sex workers turned up dead in South Florida. According to law enforcement, those cases were very similar to Darlene Toller. For example, some were stuffed in duffel bags or suitcases and made easy to find. And this here, Captain, is from Miami News 7. And they say some very profound things here, and say that because Charlie Brandt was so crafted at killing, and because Charlie Brandt killed himself, the suspicions that Charlie Brandt may have killed 10 to 12, even 14 women may never be confirmed. However, one fact will not change. There were 2 Charlie Brandts who lived in the Keys. And the Charlie Brandt that the people didn't know was one of the sickest serial killers in South Florida history.
Want to thank you for joining us here again in the garage, onward and upward, inching our way, just like LeBron James. Just we're going to break the record, get to that 1,000 episodes. We're inching our way. Join us for the journey. Colonel, do we have any recommended reading for the beautiful listeners?
This week, we are happy to recommend Invisible Killer, The Monster Behind the Mask by Diana Montaigne and Sean Robbins. Invisible Killer is the true story of the crimes committed by Charlie Brandt and some of the crimes he is suspected of committing. This is a very complete telling of the true crime story of this serial killer, along with insights from an FBI profiler and a forensic psychologist. You can check out that recommendation and many more at truecrimegarage.com.
Yeah, if you haven't checked out the website, you should do so and pick up some swag while you're at it. And until next week,
be good, be kind, and don't litter. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, I highly recommend that you give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/garage today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/garage. This show is proudly sponsored by BetterHelp. Check out BetterHelp.com/garage today.